Imagine walking into a cafe. You look up at the menu, weigh your options, and decide, completely on your own, to order a black coffee. It feels like pure autonomy, right? Your brain, your choice, completely independent of anything else happening in the universe. But what if the math of quantum mechanics suggests that your seemingly independent choice was actually tethered to the state of a subatomic particle on the opposite side of the galaxy?
Yeah, I mean, it completely shatters the illusion of the isolated self. We build our entire understanding of reality on this premise that causes and effects are, distinct local events. You drop a glass, it shatters, you choose a coffee, you drink it.
Exactly. And today we are dismantling that exact premise. We are jumping into a deep dive on a really dense, highly theoretical text centered on something called axiom calculus.
Yes.
And it's attempting to solve the most notorious paradox in quantum mechanics, which is quantum entanglement, or what Albert Einstein famously hated and called spooky action at a distance.
He really hated it.
Yeah, he did. And by the time we finish unpacking the source material, the concepts of cause, effect, and honestly, free will are going to look entirely different to you.
Well, to really appreciate the radical solution this text proposes, we first have to look at the mathematical brick wall that standard physics hit decades ago.
Right. Set the stage for us.
So, Einstein just couldn't accept that measuring a particle in one lab could instantaneously affect a particle light years away. He argued there had to be what he called hidden variables.
Hidden variable.
Yeah. Think of it like a pair of gloves packed into two separate boxes. If you open your box and find a left glove, you instantly know the other box contains a right glove.
No faster than light communication required. Their handedness was basically secretly determined the exact moment they were packed.
Exactly. And Einstein's argument there feels incredibly intuitive.
It is intuitive. Like, of course, that's how it works.
Right. But a physicist named John Stuart Bell came along in the 1960s and mathematically proved that Einstein's intuitive glove analogy simply cannot work for quantum particles. Standard hidden variables, as Einstein imagined them, are physically impossible.
And this is where the text introduces its massive loophole, a concept called causal hidden variables.
Yeah.
But I mean, if Bell proved this impossible with an airtight mathematical inequality, what kind of loophole could possibly exist that doesn't just, break all the laws of physics?
Well, to find the loophole, you have to look at what Bell assumed was an absolute, unquestionable truth, because Bell's theorem rests on three foundational pillars.
Okay.
First is locality. That's the strict speed limit of the universe. No signal, force, or influence can travel faster than the speed of light.
No, which means no secret telegraph wires connecting particles across the cosmos. That seems like a pretty solid assumption.
Yeah, it does. The second pillar is realism. This is the assumption that physical properties exist prior to and independent of observation.
Like the moon is still there even when you aren't looking at it.
Exactly. A particle has a definite spin even before a scientist measures it.
Again, completely logical. So I'm
Yeah.
assuming the third pillar is where the cracks start to show.
The third is freedom. It's often called statistical independence, or simply free will.
Free will. Okay.
It assumes the scientists conducting an experiment have complete freedom to choose how they set up their measuring devices. Their choice of what to measure is totally independent of the particles they're measuring.
I mean, locality, realism, freedom. Honestly, those sound like the bare minimum requirements for operating in a sane universe.
Bell thought so too. And he formalized these three assumptions into a mathematical boundary known as the CHSH inequality.
Right, the famous inequality.
Yeah, it's basically a formula designed to calculate the absolute maximum correlation between two isolated systems. If the universe obeys locality, realism, and freedom, the maximum correlation value you can get out of Bell's equation is exactly two.
Okay, let's ground that math a bit so it's easier to picture. Think of it like two completely isolated casinos in different cities, and they're running a rigged coin flipping game.
I like this analogy.
Right. So the dealers are trying to synchronize their coin flips without using phones or the internet. Because they are restricted by the speed of light locality and their coins only have two states, realism, the mathematical ceiling on how often their coins can perfectly match up during random audits is hard capped.
Yes.
And that cap is the number two in Bell's inequality.
That captures the boundary perfectly. But here's the problem. When physicists actually run this experiment using entangled quantum particles, the result they get isn't two.
What do they get?
The physical experiments consistently yield a correlation value of roughly 2.828, or mathematically, 2 times the square root of 2.
Oh, wow. So they break the mathematical ceiling.
They shatter it.
The casinos are sinking their coins at a rate that shouldn't be physically possible unless they are secretly texting each other faster than the speed of light.
Which forces physicists into a very, very uncomfortable corner. To explain that 2.828 correlation, standard quantum mechanics usually demands that we sacrifice either realism or locality.
Pick your poison.
Right. We either accept that the particle's properties literally don't exist until the exact moment of measurement, or we accept that spooky action is real and particles actually are communicating instantaneously across the universe.
And both of those options feel awful. The idea that reality is just a blur of probabilities until I look at it, or that faster than light ghost signals are real. I mean, neither sits well.
And they don't.
Which brings us back to Einstein's hidden variables. Why couldn't the particles just carry hidden instruction manuals from the start? Why did Bell's math rule that out so completely?
Because Bell defined those hidden variables as separable. In a mathematical notation, he used the Greek letter lambda to represent a hidden variable. So particle A carries little lambda A, and particle B carries little lambda B. They are separate entities. And Bell proved that if little lambda A and little lambda B are strictly independent, they cannot possibly produce a correlation of 2.828. It can only ever reach 2.
I see. So standard physics treats this like two criminals getting arrested and put into separate interrogation rooms.
Yes, exactly.
They have independent alibis, they're separable hidden variables. But no matter how well they plan beforehand, if the detectives ask them entirely random questions, their independent alibis will eventually crack.
They will.
They can't match their stories at a level of 2.828 without secretly passing notes under the door. So how does our source material get around a mathematical proof? How do they solve this without resorting to passing notes?
Well, by attacking the concept of separation itself, the text introduces a radical framework called the axiom of entangled causality.
The axiom of entangled causality.
Right. It completely abandons the idea of separable hidden variables. Instead, it proposes something they call non-separability, or in the Swedish text, icke-separabilitet.
The particles aren't carrying separate instruction manuals at all? Wait, what are they carrying then?
A single unified history. The source defines a new mathematical object, the causal hidden variable, represented by a capital lambda.
Okay.
And the core equation here is entirely different from Bell's. It states that capital lambda equals the entanglement operator acting on the tensor product of little lambda A and little lambda B.
Okay, hold on. We need to translate that. What does a tensor product actually mean for the physical reality of these particles?
Think of a tensor product not as adding two things together, but multiplying their possibilities so inextricably that you can no longer describe particle A without also describing particle B.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in standard physics, you add variables. With the tensor product, you are mathematically binding their state spaces. The hidden variable does not exist in two separate locations. It is an irreducibly joint structure. It's a single causal root.
I think I have an analogy for this. Here's where it gets really interesting. We are looking at this all wrong when we think of two criminals or two separate coins. Imagine two computer monitors sitting on opposite sides of a massive room. On both screens, you see the exact same highly complex video game rendering in perfect synchronization.
Right. So a standard physicist walks into the room, looks at the two isolated monitors, and assumes they must be transmitting data to each other wirelessly to stay perfectly synced.
Yes. But the truth is, there are no wireless signals. Both monitors are simply plugged into the exact same graphics card hidden under the floorboards.
I love that.
You are looking at two different screens, two different particles flying apart in space, but there is only one joint causal root rendering the image for both of them simultaneously.
That perfectly illustrates the concept of non-separability. And, you know, this fundamentally redefines what we mean by locality. Under this axiom of entangled causality, the correlation of 2.828 doesn't require a faster-than-light signal because the cause doesn't travel between the particles.
It's already there.
Exactly. The cause already exists within their shared causal past. The source text makes a brilliant distinction here. Hidden variables are completely local if their causal influence respects the light cone structure, even if the resulting statistical correlations appear non-local.
So they never cheat the speed of light. They are just playing back a file from the same hard drive.
Basically, yes.
But if they're sharing this joint root, how do we know this isn't just a mathematical trick? Like, how does the framework prove this isn't just spooky action hiding behind a different equation?
Oh, the text is incredibly rigorous about this. It introduces a boundary condition called a critical causality parameter, denoted as etacritical.
Etacritical.
Yes. It's a calculation of exactly how much non-local entanglement strength needs to be embedded in that shared causal root to reproduce the bizarre math of quantum mechanics without requiring a single photon or signal to break the speed of light.
And what does that calculation come out to? How much entanglement is actually required?
Exactly, 17.2%. The math dictates that eta critical is approximately 0.172.
Wait, really? 17.2%? That feels bizarrely specific. Why not 50% or 100%?
Because if the parameter was zero, you'd just have standard, boring classical physics, and your correlation would be stuck at Bell's limit of 2.
Right.
But if the parameter was 100%, you'd have magic. Complete non-local omnipotence, where everything instantly affects everything else. The text proves that you only need roughly 17.2% of the causal structure to be entangled to perfectly warp the probability space just enough to hit that 2.828 correlation mark.
So the universe only bends the rules exactly as much as it absolutely has to.
Precisely. It's the minimum threshold of causal entanglement needed to simulate non-locality while remaining strictly physically local. No signals travel faster than light. Einstein's speed limit remains entirely intact.
Okay, I am fully tracking with the graphics card analogy, and I genuinely love the elegance of the 17.2% threshold. It saves locality and it saves realism. The particles are real and they aren't breaking the speed limit.
Yes.
But, there's a massive missing link here.
Let's hear it. Where does the analogy break down for you?
The scientists. We said earlier that the scientists conducting the experiment wait until the very last microsecond to randomly choose which axis they are going to measure the particle on.
Right.
They flip a switch to measure vertical spin or horizontal spin. If the particles are just following a pre-written script generated by a joint causal route billions of years ago, how does that script possibly know which random switch the scientist is going to flip today?
This raises an important question. And honestly, you've just walked right into the darkest, most controversial corner of this entire theoretical framework.
Uh-oh.
Physicists refer to this as the measurement dependence problem.
Because, I mean, if the particle already knows the answer to the test, it must mean the particle somehow knew which questions the scientist was going to ask. But the scientist hasn't even decided yet.
Remember Bell's three pillars. Locality, realism, and freedom. The axiom framework saves locality. It saves realism. It allows a mathematical ceiling to hit 2.828. But the absolute unavoidable cost of this mathematical framework is the complete sacrifice of the third pillar.
Freedom.
Yes. For this joint causal route to work, the measurement settings, the exact choices the scientists make in the laboratory, cannot be independent of the causal hidden variable.
Wait. Are you saying the framework requires the scientist's choice to be rigged? That they never actually chose anything?
Welcome to superdeterminism.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The framework argues that the universe possesses a completely shared, exhaustive causal history. The Big Bang didn't just determine the hidden state of the subatomic particles. That exact same causal route also meticulously determined the evolutionary biology, the neurochemistry, and the exact sequence of firing synapses that would lead a scientist to flip that measurement switch 14 billion years later.
That is deeply unsettling.
The text formulates this through something called the causal freedom constraint. The mathematical equation is written as a conditional probability. Basically, the probability of the scientist choosing measurement settings, theta and phi, given the hidden variable capital lambda, does not equal the independent probability of choosing theta multiplied by the independent probability of choosing phi.
Let me make sure I'm wrapping my head around that equation. It's essentially mathematical proof that the variables governing the particle and the variables governing the scientist's brain are not statistically independent.
Exactly. They are deeply structurally correlated. The freedom of choice is physically constrained by the entanglement structure of the universe itself.
So it's not just a rigged coin-flipping game. It's like playing a video game where you think you have autonomy. You have the controller in your hand, you're fighting a boss, and you decide to dodge left and press the A button. You feel the tactile sensation of making that choice. But superdeterminism suggests the underlying code of the game didn't just script the boss's attack. The code actually physically determined that your finger would press the A button at that exact millisecond.
It recontextualizes everything.
Yeah.
You know, when Bell formulated his theorem, he assumed the player had free will over the controller. If you remove that assumption, if you accept that the universe is superdeterministic, the paradox of quantum entanglement instantly dissolves.
Because you don't need faster than light travel.
Exactly. You don't need particles to magically spring into existence upon observation either.
Because the particles aren't communicating with each other, they are communicating with the shared past.
Yes. It is correlation at a distance, born from a shared history, not action at a distance. You just have to accept that everything from the subatomic particles in a vacuum chamber to the scientist looking at the data to you and me having this exact conversation right now is bound together by an incredibly complex, inescapable web of correlated causes.
It's staggering to think about the philosophical implications of that. Just recapping here, we started this deep dive trying to understand how two particles could synchronize perfectly across the cosmos. We threw out Bell's assumption of separate instruction manuals. We brought in the axiom of entangled causality, uniting the particles under a single, non-separable root.
A joint root utilizing exactly 17.2% entanglement strength to perfectly mimic non-local behavior while remaining strictly local.
And the ultimate price for that elegant mathematical solution was free will. The realization that our choices, our lab experiments, our very thoughts are causally tethered to the particles we are trying to study.
It demands that we stop viewing the universe as a theater where independent actors perform on a passive stage and start viewing the universe itself as a singular, unified event that is still unfolding.
Think about the physical reality of what is happening right now. You are listening to our voices. You feel the weight of your phone in your hand or the headphones on your ears. You likely feel that you made a conscious, independent choice to dedicate your attention to this topic today.
Naturally.
But if the axiom framework holds true, the causal chain that led us to speak these exact words and the causal chain that led your neurochemistry to process them share the exact same root. Your choice to listen wasn't an isolated spark in your brain. It was a localized expression of a 14-billion-year-old entanglement structure.
It is a profound shift in perspective. But the most compelling part of this source material isn't just the philosophy. It's that the text actually provides a way to physically test if this terrifying level of superdeterminism is real.
Wait, really? A way to test if free will is an illusion in a laboratory? How could you possibly isolate the universe's source code to prove that?
The text outlines a theoretical experiment called the causal test protocol. It proposes that we stop looking just at two entangled particles and instead measure something called tripartite correlations.
Tripartite, meaning three-way.
Exactly. The protocol involves looking for subtle, hidden causal signatures extending outward to a third party, an observer, or a third macroscopic system in the environment. If standard quantum mechanics is right, and the scientist's choice is truly free, the measurement settings should be completely uncorrelated with the hidden variables of the particles.
But if superdeterminism is real, that third party, the environment, the scientist would carry a geometric mathematical signature proving they are bound to the same causal root as the particles.
They are looking for the strings of the puppet master in the statistical noise. If physicists run the causal test protocol and successfully detect those tripartite correlations, it would mathematically prove that the measurement settings in the particles were determined together. It would be empirical evidence of a superdeterministic universe.
That is deeply haunting. Imagine the day that paper gets published. If scientists successfully run the causal test protocol tomorrow and they find those tripartite signatures, if they find empirical, physical proof that the video game is rigged and the code is pressing the buttons for us, how will that alter the way you experience your life? Will you still feel the weight of responsibility for the choices you make, or will you find comfort in knowing you are exactly where the universe mathematically requires you to be?